Homelessness is an issue that thousands have struggled with in Clark County for decades. The annual homeless count was just completed, and the number of new homeless is likely to increase. The question is why. We're going to talk about the homeless count today and what that means for state and federal money for services. We'll also talk about a growing number of homeless youth in the area. Fulala Riley is the president and CEO of Help of Southern Nevada, which provides a variety of services for the homeless. Fulala, welcome back to State of Nevada.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Fulala, it doesn't really matter where people live anymore in Las Vegas. The homeless population is visually evident to everybody throughout the valley. When you're doing a homeless count, how do you do it? Because they are so spread out.
So we all have, those of us that help and volunteer get maps, and we're actually broken up into the populations that you are going to count. So we don't deploy everyone out and say, here, count. The homeless are counted, so they have an urban count, and we are provided with maps and tracks that we follow. We have a tunnel count that goes out. Those are obviously with maps of all the tunnels that are under Las Vegas. There's a rural count that happens the day after. And then, of course, there's a youth count.
And do you try to count everybody, or do you try to extrapolate numbers based on samples?
So the count is a physical count. However, there's a approved methodology by HUD that extrapolates and basically, there's a formula that it goes through by the physical count, though.
And so the count this year is done. Give me some predictions. Are the number of new homeless going up?
I would say that you're probably going to see an increase in street homeless. You're going to see an increase in youth homeless. Yeah, I think our community is going to see an increase.
Now, you're going to see an increase. Do you determine or distinguish between newly homeless and chronically homeless? And how do you do that?
So the street count, you're actually just doing a visual count. And then there's a follow-up to the count where it's a survey of the count. And the service providers hand out or given X amount of surveys to conduct. And it's a little more in-depth. And the physical count that you hear about, the census itself, is literally a physical count of, hey, we saw on our tracks X amount of homeless, and that's all we do at the count. However, it's these surveys afterwards that we continue to go out. And for instance, our mobile crisis team had 100 surveys, and we tried to survey folks in a diverse area because, you can't just go into one neighborhood and say, hey, we're going to do all our 100 right here. It doesn't give us a good sample of the sort of information that they're looking for. And
so the number you anticipate is going to go up. The real question is, who are they? Where did they live before? I mean, why? What's happening? What's causing this increase, especially at a time when the economy we're hearing and really kind of feeling here is booming?
Yeah. So the street homeless that we will that we encounter, oftentimes, although there might be booming economy, they aren't prepared to take advantage of that boom. For instance, they might be struggling with mental health issues that obviously will stop them from gaining employment. They might be struggling with substance abuse. They may be just got here from another place. Also, because of our lovely and mild winters, folks may come here during the harsher winter months. And they oftentimes like it here, but it could be they aren't prepared. So they aren't prepared to take on getting that job to end the cycle of homelessness for them.
I guess part of the reason I asked that question, because it seems like in the last couple of years, we've heard of the numbers decreasing. And I'm wondering if it's surprising that we'll see an increase now.
I don't know that it was it will be surprising, because I think there's some things that are contributing to the homeless a little more. We know that we have an opiate issue here, and substance abuse seems to be a large issue, but a lot of times the substance abuse is them self-medicating to deal with their mental health. So I don't know that we're surprised. I think as a community, we've made some really great strides in trying to address homelessness, particularly street homelessness. But it just seems like as we continue to get better at it, just as our community grows, so does that population.
You mentioned drug addiction issues. Is the opioid issue really part of this whole story? I mean, is
it a
big,
start
is it a big
it.
Part?
Yes, because somebody that is employed, their spiral into homelessness could start with something as simple as their abuse of their opioid prescription leads them to lose their job. And if they lose their job, that leads into a whole host of basically that spiral into homelessness.
So for people, say, driving around Clark County or just wanting to look at a map, and where would you point to, like, where is the greatest congregation right now of the homeless in Clark County?
So that's changed over the years. Like, before, it used to be in the city of Las Vegas, like right there in that corridor of hope. But I would tell you that as our community and valley has spread out, there are pockets of homelessness that are over, like, by the Las Vegas sign. There seems to be there in our neighborhood, like the Flamingo, Cambridge area, over by Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth. You know, so there's quite a few areas in town, but none of our areas now are, no one doesn't have homeless in their neighborhoods.
It's everywhere.
Absolutely, even in
the tonier parts of the valley?
Yeah, yeah.
And with the attention that you talked about, we talked about the tunnels under the city. How are they set up by these hundreds of homeless as homes? You went there, too, to count as well.
Yeah, yeah. So Help Southern Nevada led the tunnel count because we're fairly experienced at it. We've been going there for about 12 years. So they're actually quite organized. There's usually when there's three tunnels, there's a they're organized in one for human, where they actually keep their beds and encampments and whatnot. And another might be set aside for where the restrooms are. And then the middle usually is, I don't actually know what the middle is. It's just separation from the restroom area. So they have them. Some of them build dams, you know, because we have those flash flooding issues. Some of them will build dams, and they get very creative. And recently we noticed that with the floods recently, they build dams and have plastic wrap, like trash bags, with the dams that they build. So no water gets in when it's trickling down. So they do their best to stay dry.
Is it illegal to do this, to live in the tunnels?
It might be. It might be illegal. It might be, yes.
Are we talking about hundreds of people or thousands? I mean, what's a rough estimate?
I would say I think the last count was approaching 1,000.
And is that population growing as well?
Yes, it is growing. This count was probably the most organized we've been and thorough we've been. We actually walked miles and miles of the tunnels, and not just the opening. In past years, we may have passed by the opening and kind of peeked in and just kind of been, you know, like, oh, it looks like three people and whatnot. But most folks don't live there individually. The homeless tend to work in partners to keep themselves safe. So where there's one, there's usually two or three.
We're talking about the recent homeless count survey conducted throughout Clark County. We've been talking to Fulala Riley. She's the president and CEO of Help of Southern Nevada. This is State of Nevada. It's State of Nevada. I'm Joe Shaneman. We're talking about a recent homeless count in Clark County, and joining us is Fulala Riley. She's the president and CEO of Help of Southern Nevada. And now joining us is Arash Ghafoori. He's the executive director of the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth. Arash, welcome back.
Thanks for having us back, Joe.
Arash, your group helps teens and young people who are homeless. And I think most of the people who live in Las Vegas have seen some of these sad situations of homeless teens and little children. Are we tracking the number of teens in these homeless counts?
Absolutely, yeah. We're definitely tracking youth. It's a major focus, and it's actually divided, and youth have its own count as well, because it's a rather unique population in terms of why they become homeless, but also in terms of counting them as well, because they're not necessarily like adults or other populations that are more that you can find visually on the streets. Homeless youth tend to not want to be ostracized or singled out. They're often hiding their status, and they're not going to be the ones that you sort of see in the street corners holding up signs or pushing shopping carts. They're usually trying to hide in abandoned areas and not be found out, and that's for a lot of different reasons, from preventing further abuse or trauma, getting victimized on the streets because they're on the streets suddenly and unpredictably and don't know what to do, as well as their fear of authority and their abusers as well. And on the streets now, there's gangs and other criminal agents that have made a business out of luring and victimizing our youth that are on the streets in our community.
Do you have some numbers you want to share? I mean, what are the numbers looking like for homeless youth in this county?
Yeah, well, let me kind of start this way. First of all, Las Vegas ranks third in the whole country for having the highest number of unaccompanied homeless children and youth that live on our streets on a single night. We have the number one rate in the country for having the highest percentage of our homeless youth that are living unsheltered on the streets, meaning that we literally do not have enough infrastructure or resources to get all those youth off the streets if we could somehow find them all in one day at one time. So these numbers are pretty scary. We're leading the country in terms of the numbers of homeless youth that we have here. And
is there an aggregate number?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to look at it. But for example, last year in the Clark County School District, there's almost 15,000 homeless youth enrolled in Clark County School District. Last time we did the point in time count, which is what Falala was describing earlier, we actually go on one day and try to visually observe who's out there in terms of youth, and then also on that same day see who's in shelter or in transitional housing, and then do those follow-up surveys. We found that last year there was over 2,052 youth on the streets on a given night right here in Southern Nevada. And I have to say that although it is HUD-approved methodology, it's pretty standard knowledge that these are underestimations. It is impossible to get a great number on one day and one time, so we suspect that there's even more.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about how. What are the factors that lead to teens becoming homeless?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing is it's not like adults. A lot of people think that it's the same thing as homeless adults, that an adult has a shock to their system. Falala was talking about opioid issue. They have a financial downward spiral, whatever it may be. And then homeless adults end up being in a situation where they realize they can't be independent anymore. Youth, on the other hand, have never been independent. They're relying on others, parents, caretakers, to make decisions, to support them, to make sure that they have a positive and nurturing environment. So a lot of times with youth, they become homeless suddenly and unpredictably because of severe family breakdowns in homes and or even failed institutional systems. So, for example, a lot of youth are getting kicked out of their homes because they're LGBT. A lot of youth are getting kicked out of their homes or leave their homes because their parents are addicted to drugs or there's significant domestic violence or other similar types of breakdowns in homes. And then we also have youth that are running away from group homes and other systems as well and choosing the streets over whatever environments they were in. So with youth, it's very different. It's not a fact that they could no longer keep their independence. They've never had their independence, and they're trying to learn how to be independent and have a external shock happen to them that is usually suddenly and unpredictably. So there's not a downward spiral for them. It's sudden.
And we're talking about a count here. And if they are difficult to find, how do you go about finding them and doing a count?
Absolutely. Well, we use HUD-approved methodology in our community. But essentially, it's sort of the same thing Falala was describing, that we do our best to sort of break up our county into tracks. And then we deployed, there's four youth providers that deployed and broke up the community and got a lot of volunteers to go out with maps and actually try to count these youth in the different census tracts in our community and visually observe them during the day.
Yeah, but how do you know it's a teen that's not just skipping class?
Absolutely. Well, some of these surveys and outreach efforts actually involve trying to make contact and asking questions when it's safe and appropriate. So some of the people out there are not just literally counting anyone that's standing there on the street, but if it's safe, they'll actually approach and ask for information to try to verify these counts, as well as we do surveys later as well. But you're right. It's not a bulletproof methodology.
Now, I have a question for both you and Falala. I wonder, because of your experience with homelessness, do you, like, let's say you walk into a grocery store or a 7-Eleven, do you think you see things that maybe lay people don't see? You can spot things that other lay people don't see. Spot a homeless kid or a homeless a child, and what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that I've been working in this sector, you know, now for almost 7-8 years, and it's entirely changed the way that I look at some of the youth in our community that I see in certain situations. Actually, I think it was either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, I was going to 7-Eleven, and there's a youth standing very near the 7-Eleven, and he looked pretty normal. He had a backpack on, everything. And I asked him, hey, why are you here? And it turned out that he was a homeless youth, kind of drifting, had some mental health issues that he was going through, didn't want services. And really, I asked him, hey, if you do need services, I explained to him what Safe Place is, I explained to him what other organizations are, and I usually try to keep little cards in my car, and I'll actually hand them to them. Because it's not like you can approach a youth and say, hey, I got help for you, come with me, because they're aware that predators use those same tactics. So we can't just come up in a white van with candy and food and water and say, hey, come with us, we're the outreach team. So sometimes it involves us doing outreach efforts where we arm them with that information, and sometimes they decide. If right then and there they will not commit to services, they at least have that knowledge in their brain, so at a future time they know where to turn to, so they have better options than some of the more black market options that are in our communities right now.
And Falala Riley, as president and CEO of Help Us Southern Nevada, you're very familiar with homelessness as well. Describe a situation similar to that where you've seen somebody and you knew you could just tell they were homeless. And what do you do?
Run into somebody. I have the luxury of having a mobile crisis team where I will usually right there and then ask them, is it okay if I contact my team to come out and see you? They have, our team has the bright green shirts that say Help Hope Home on them and Help Us Southern Nevada, because Arash does bring up a very good point. You don't want to just walk up to folks and say, hey, I can help you. We do. I think mine was an adult, and I found him at in front of the post office. I went to go drop off some mail items, but I noticed an elderly gentleman sitting outside. But it wasn't a normal time. I was actually just dropping it off. And so I asked him, because he looked like possibly panhandling, and I asked him, you do know that they're closed today, right? They're only, you know, a drop-off station today, and there's not a lot of foot traffic. You're not going to make a lot of money here. And we just struck up a conversation, and so I asked him if I was to send out our team, would he be open to speaking to them? And I usually will take a picture of them and send it to my team and say, this gentleman is at this cross streets. And they caught up to him the following day. Unfortunately, that gentleman was had some form of cancer once we got him into care. My team captain, if you will, he actually shared with me that unfortunately it's too late for that gentleman. Like he had a pretty severe and advanced form of cancer. And our guy actually said, you know, because I was like, oh, we didn't get to him quick enough. And he actually said, no, but you should find some comfort in he won't die alone and he won't die out on the streets.
And Joe, I really quickly want to say for our listeners that there's a big difference between homeless youth and homeless adults in mm-hmm. terms of why they're homeless, but also how they interact with services as well. And homeless youth are notoriously service resistant, meaning that they've been jaded by a lot of adult and institutional figures. So sometimes with youth, the outreach approach has to be different. But we do have a Safe Place program that essentially we arm these youth with these information instead of deploying a team to them. Whenever they're ready, if they're ready right then and there or any time, they can go to any of our Safe Place locations, and we have hundreds in the valley, and probably 400 or 500 if it includes our bus systems. The bus will give them a free ride to the nearest safe place. All Terrible Herbs convenience stores in our community are safe places, as well as our City of Las Vegas Fire Department. So this gives us essentially the opportunity to give them an access point when they're ready, if they're ready, at any time, anywhere, essentially at every street corner in our community.
Now, as for the homeless count, how are the numbers used? What do you do with them?
So that's actually how we determine, or how HUD determines how much money we get as a community, is basically off of the census and how much we have. So that money comes in, although it's for HUD, it is actually a valuable number and a lot of information. And that count and all of the results are actually available on the Help Hope Home website. It's helphopehome.org. And it actually has a great, like, it'll answer any questions that any of the listeners want to delve into, like, how'd you get it, who's doing it, who, you know, like, the providers involved, even the methodology. They try to explain it for those of us that aren't, you know, numbers crunchers and whatnot. So that's actually a really good resource. The numbers for the count of this year will not be available to us until April or May.
One thing I want to mention is we spoke with Mayor Carolyn Goodman recently, and she said essentially Las Vegas is saying there's a zero veteran homelessness issue in the city now. So the number of homeless veterans is on the way down, it sounds like. But for the general homeless population, what are some of the issues or things that aren't being done that maybe are being done for homeless veterans?
So I'd like to just clarify, that's actually functional zero. And I know that that doesn't
What does that mean?
So functional zero, what that means is that based on the number of veterans that we have, if we, like Arash said, found every single one that's on the streets right now, we actually have the resources, the housing units, the supportive services to address their homelessness. So our community is trying to work towards functional zero. We know, I know it makes us sound like Pollyanna, yeah, there's zero people out on the streets that are veterans. That's not true.
Okay.
It's the functional zero, and that's where in the other subpopulations, whether it's youth or adult, families, functional zero is a goal that our community is trying to get to. For if we found every single homeless youth at the same time on the same day, like, that we have beds to put them into.
And that's not the case with the general homelessness population?
That is not the case for general homeless. It's not the case for youth homeless. The only subpopulation that's reached functional zero is the veterans.
So what are some of the things that need to be done to reach that functional zero? What do we need?
So we need more beds. We need more money for the supportive services to wrap around whatever subpop we're talking about. Arash could probably talk to you for 2 days straight about what we're missing in the youth count and whatnot. One of the things that HELP has done is we opened the Shannon West Homeless Youth Center, the new facility, which increased our bed count in the community by 101 beds. We built a facility that, you know, has 101 beds more than the 65 we had previously. But where we might not be at the point to open all 166. So right now, only 80 of our beds are operational because that's what we can afford in the first year to open.
And Arash, what about for homeless youth? What are the needs?
It's similar. We need more infrastructure, more supportive services. In fact, if you were to, like I said, those 2,052 youth we found last year one night, if we were to try to house them all, we can only house 18% of them in our community right now. So that shows just that there's a huge disparity between the amount of youth on the streets and the amount of actual shelter beds and temporary transitional housing beds, et cetera, that are available to them. Because the idea is that we need to get these youth, especially off the streets, as fast as possible. One in three teens can be lured into survival sex within 48 hours of being on the streets. They're more likely to be victimized by pimps, et cetera, more likely to be lured into the commercial sexual exploitation of children. In fact, the number one risk factor for commercial sexual exploitation of children or domestic minor sex trafficking is homelessness. So it's imperative that we need to be more preventative in our community. So it's beyond having enough beds. We need more preventative services in our community to make sure that when youth are thrust into these situations suddenly and more often than not beyond their control, the substantial majority of the time, we need resources that can react and get to them ASAP before they're at a point where they hit rock bottom or are victimized further. So we need more infrastructure. We need more supportive services. But, Joe, it actually starts with more awareness. People do not realize how bad our youth homelessness situation is in our community. And what's unique about youth homelessness is it can feed into all the other subpopulations that you're asking about, veterans, adults, families. So if we stemmy youth homelessness, we're also going to hopefully stemmy a little bit of our overall homeless population counts.
Fulala Riley is the president and CEO of Help of Southern Nevada. Arash Ghaffouri is the executive director of the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth. And you can find a link to those resources for each of those groups at our website, knpr.org. Fulala and Arash, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.